This is Fighting Bob Radio. I'm Eric Shubring with the founder of FightingBob.com, Fighting Bob Festival, and more, Ed Garvey. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Eric.
We have had, it seems like just about the time you think maybe you're getting used to the new terrain around us politically, it all begins to shift again, and something else changes and surprises us.
Well, I'm delighted to say that there are a couple of surprises. Perhaps Bernie Sanders is going to run for president. His office confirmed that they're looking at it. They haven't made a decision, but wouldn't that be exciting?
Well, he said some exciting...
And then there's Elizabeth Warren that many people want to run.
Yes, yes. Well, some are suggesting that she challenge Hillary Clinton in a primary. Hillary, of course, she's the front runner, I guess, for the nomination for 2016. And our very Governor Scott Walker, has been traveling the country with his new book, the book Unintimidated.
I haven't been able to get to the bookstore to pick it up yet.
And he's making all the high points on major television, mainstream television. He's been on National Public Radio being interviewed. He's not going to be at the Wisconsin Governor's Conference this weekend and in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's too busy with the book. He and the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources are on a video that can be seen at the Department of Natural Resources website. They're wearing blaze orange. He's got a gun over his shoulder. And they're touting the beginning of the gun deer season this Saturday and how it is one of the great economic drivers. I guess he's wearing a blaze orange, hoping he'll be less of a target than he has been. Joining us is Mike McCabe of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Good morning, Mike. Well, I seem to...
Good morning, Mike.
Whoa, excuse me, forgive me. We have Mike on right now. Mike McCabe of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Eric. Hey, Ed.
Good morning, Mike.
Good to have you with us. Well, the investigation, the probe, the John Doe investigation, which in most other states would be referred to as a grand jury investigation, has been expanded. There's an effort by some to have the investigation dropped. It is into the investigating, apparently, although we can't know for sure, the question of money and politics. Imagine that.
Imagine that. You know, and what you're hearing are screams of protest and outrage on the right, saying that, you know, really making a couple points. They're saying the timing of this is obviously political. It's all right before we enter an election year. This is all timed to have maximum impact on the 2014 election. Never mind that what we know about this particular John Doe investigation is that it was started in February of 2012. So, you know, it didn't come to the public view until one of the targets, a guy named Eric O'Keefe, who was served a subpoena under this investigation, talked about it with the Wall Street Journal. Now, he risks being held in contempt of court for violating an order that he not talk about this, but he went to the Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch's paper, and they wrote an editorial about this, saying that this was just, you know, this was like the IRS an investigation into all these nonprofits. This is about trying to silence groups and stifle free speech, and they talk about it now, right as we approach the 2014 election season, I think in hopes of duping people into believing that this whole thing was launched yesterday. It actually started in February 2012. The other thing they're saying is that the people who are conducting the investigation are partisans, so this is a big witch hunt. Again, they overlooked the fact that that the special prosecutor who's been named, the person who's leading this investigation, is a 30-year career federal prosecutor who was once on George W. Bush's short list. He was one of three finalists for an appointment as U.S. attorney for Milwaukee. So he's no partisan, and if he is a partisan, it's on the side of these groups. And then, of course, the whole John Doe probe is being overseen by a retired appeals court judge. So, you know, they're screaming bloody murder about this thing, trying to say that this is nothing but a politically motivated witch hunt and that the timing of it is horrible. And they're not letting facts or truth get in the way of a good opportunity to try to bully law enforcement officials into submission. And that's really what's at work here. They're working the refs.
Yeah, they're just
working the refs, just like any good coach does in basketball or football or baseball. They get in the ear of the officials and try to get them to swallow their whistle at some point. And that's exactly what these outfits are trying to do now.
Working the refs. Why are these called John Doe investigations, where in other states they're called grand jury investigations?
I'm not sure how it all got started, but the court maintains control over the John Doe. Whereas a grand jury is the district attorney or the U.S. attorney that oversees. So if you were going to be the target of one or the other, I think you'd probably rather be a target of the John Doe.
Mm-hmm. Well, the implications are clearly that there's something going on. Something happened in the Walker administration. But, of course, we know that while he was county executive in Milwaukee, that people as close as just a dozen feet away had created email and were using county time to campaign on behalf of someone, but he didn't know this.
Mm-hmm.
The governor.
Yeah, he was completely in the dark.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe we should give him some light bulbs.
Mike McCabe, what is the Club for Growth? Now, this fellow O'Keefe, he's the one who's, you know, perhaps speaking out of turn. But who is the Club for Growth? What is it, and what are the ties to Scott Walker that we know about?
Well, the Club for Growth is a national outfit that does have a state arm here in Wisconsin, Wisconsin Club for Growth. It's an outfit that is tied to big money interests on Wall Street and in American industry. It is a group that backs Republican candidates all across the country. Has spent at least $9 million here in the last couple of elections to try to influence the vote here in Wisconsin alone. Has put a lot of money behind Scott Walker. Has put a lot of money behind a handful of other state officials. We first started seeing Club for Growth involved here in Wisconsin in a state Supreme Court election back in 2007, when state Supreme Court elections started getting turned into auctions. Well, Club for Growth was right there in the middle of it. That was the first we saw of Club for Growth, was trying to turn the state Supreme Court and create a conservative majority there. They've moved on to support, you know, politicians like Scott Walker, got very involved in the recall election and has spent millions of dollars influencing elections. Now, you know, the John Doe
probe, where do they get their money?
Well, you know, the Club for Growth, like so many of these groups, are able to engage in sort of an elaborate shell game that enables them to keep the true origins of their money a secret. One of the people who's known to be behind Club for Growth is a guy named Howie Rich, who's a wealthy real estate developer from New York. And it's also been rumored over the years that the Koch brothers have some connection here as well. But again, these are groups that are really operating outside the law and are able to thwart disclosure by engaging in this kind of elaborate shell game. One of the things we know about Club for Growth is that they also funded other groups that have been active in Wisconsin. Citizens for a Strong America got money transferred or funneled from Wisconsin Club for Growth. And then Citizens for a Strong America funneled money to a group called Wisconsin Family Action and another called United Sportsmen with funds provided by Club for Growth. So you can see how, you know, what we got is a really elaborate shell game going on here where money is being moved around in ways that enable these crooked dealings to be out of sight, to keep the public in the dark about where the money's really coming from. And you know, I have to say, the John Doe probe could possibly be looking at groups on both sides. The only thing that's happened is that a guy like Eric O'Keefe comes out and says publicly that 29 different conservative groups are being targeted and that subpoenas have been issued. And so we have some insight into the groups that are being targeted, Club for Growth, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, a group called the Center to Protect Patient Rights, which is funded by the Koch brothers. That group was not only active here in Wisconsin, but recently paid a $1 million fine in California to settle allegations of money laundering. Out in California, there was an investigation into these shell games and how they were moving money to thwart disclosure, and they ended up paying a $1 million fine out there in California to settle those allegations. It looks like they were engaged in the exact same kind of activity here in Wisconsin, and there's another outfit called Jobs First Coalition, the American Federation for Children. And, you know, that group, for example, Dick DeVos out of Michigan, his family created Amway Corporation. And the Walton family of Walmart fame, of course, is very involved in American Federation for Children. So you look at all these groups together, and it's like a who's who of American captains of industry and you know, the proverbial 1%. And you know, they've taken their money, they've pooled it together, they're moving it around in this shell game to keep the public from being able to see who's really providing the funding, and then they come in and they saturate the airwaves with advertising aimed at getting their candidates elected and reelected.
Wow.
Well, the money
that's
is kept
pretty
dark.
Discouraging.
Yeah, the money is kept dark. It's being hidden. There's sort of this, you know, the shell game to obscure where the money's coming from and where it's going to, being kept from the public. I wonder if the public, you know, if this average citizen, if most voters, for example, particularly Democrats and others, or even Republicans, would be surprised at this. They'd say, oh, well, yeah, that's the nature of it, isn't it? Ever since Citizen United, the government's for sale and politicians are for sale.
They won't tell us when the sale is going to be held.
Yeah, well, the sale.
Or even who the buyers are.
Right.
So what do we do about it? You know, I was asked just the other day, someone was pointing out we don't have the political will, or there doesn't seem to be the political will to do whatever, to work to stop climate change, to alter the campaign finance system, to get rid of the kind of corruption that this seems to very clearly suggest, Mike. But if this country has, as a result of this, or this is an example of how we really don't have a democracy in this country, that we have what many call as, you know, an inverted totalitarianism, where corporate giants, whether they're the Koch brothers or J.P. Morgan Chase or the Goldman Sachs or Boeing, are in control. What do we mean by political will at this point? Whose political will? What do we?
Well, how do you get good people to get involved? I mean, if you were to sit down with people who are thinking about running for governor, say, well, let me just kind of explain to you what's going on, and if you just told them what you told us 5 minutes ago, I think most of those people would say, I'm not interested in running.
And, of course, that is happening, Ed. You know, there are an awful lot of good people who would make excellent public officials. They would bring great ideas to the political process, and they've chosen not to enter the arena because they don't feel like they can do what it takes to come up with the kind of money needed to compete these days. And they look at the tone and tenor of the campaigns and the smears and all of that, and they say, why would I want to do that to my family? So I think it's up to citizens to first become aware of just what a cancer is growing in the body of democracy, and then push for the kind of reform that will create a political arena that good people will be willing to enter again. And I think the first thing that has to happen is just awareness, and not just awareness of those who are politically clued in, but average citizens have to become aware of how these groups are operating and how crooked this whole system has become. And I have to say that, you know, I do see light bulbs going on in across the country that does leave me at least with some hope. I noticed recently, for example, that the state of Utah held a vote on whether the Constitution should be amended to effectively overturn the Citizens United decision. And, you know, the vote in Utah, 85% of the people said yes. They wanted the Constitution amended. That's a higher percentage than the vote was in the city of Madison, when Madison voted on whether to amend the Constitution to overturn Citizens United. Now, Madison was one of the early votes. It was one of the places that held some of the first votes on a constitutional amendment, and the vote was in the high 70% area. And so you can see that even a conservative state like Utah, now a multi-partisan consensus has emerged in places like Utah. The support for this kind of thing has grown even beyond what it was in Madison when the vote was held in a very liberal place a couple of years ago. So, you know, that says that light bulbs are going on across the country in Republican places. Fort Atkinson, the home of the Senate Republican leader, held a vote on overturning Citizens United, amending the Constitution. The vote there rivaled the level of support that you saw in Madison and Dane County. So in Republican places, in Democratic places, people see how spoiled and rotten the system has become, and that ultimately is what is going to drive future change, is when that sort of national consensus begins to emerge. And eventually the political actors will have to run to catch up to where the people are.
Well, I sure hope you're right.
I hope I live to see it play out.
Well, I think if you put this on a ballot right now in Wisconsin, I think it would pass with 9-1 or 10-1.
Absolutely, and you know, we've been pushing for a state resolution that would put this on the ballot statewide. It's called Assembly Joint Resolution 50. We got it introduced in the Assembly. Of course, the Republicans don't want that vote to happen, and they're stonewalling it, just like they're stonewalling a hearing on redistricting reform. But people have got to keep at them and keep pushing this kind of thing, because I think you're right, Ed. If we could get Assembly Joint Resolution 50 passed and a statewide vote were held, I think it would pass 9-1.
Yeah,
it would pass.
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah, I look up at Mike, Northwest Wisconsin, the proposed mine by the Gogebic Taconite. A survey was done by the University of Wisconsin Superior Economics Department. Found that, as I understand it, only 21% of the residents of Iron County thought to be where most support would be for such a mine. Only 21% thought the mine was a good idea. You have a state senator, Tom Tiffany. He's being called by some Taconites, Tommy Tiffany. Seems to clearly is not working for the people of the region. He's clearly doing the bidding of the corporate interests who both want to mine for the silica sand for hydraulic fracturing by removing local control over such matters from cities, towns, and counties, and pressing ahead with this mine that only 21% of Iron County want. Ashland County, it's overwhelmingly opposed.
Right.
The region where the people live, opposed. But you've got a Republican legislature that's locked in because of redistricting. There is little reason, it would seem, for legislators, Republican legislators, and even some Democrats to follow the will of the people. They're in office, and their greatest concern is to get elected the next time, not apparently the interest of the people whom they are supposed to represent, particularly in the case of Tiffany and the Republicans, but rather corporate interests who truly run this country, if we are to believe what better minds than mine tell us.
And Eric, I was going to add that those lawmakers in the Capitol have 16 million reasons to ignore the will of the people on mining. You look at poll after poll, people in the Pinoki range don't want the mine. And they've convinced their local elected officials in many cases to pass resolutions trying to block it. And then state legislators overturn that local will and say, we're going to do this anyway. We're going to ram this thing down your throat. Well, we followed the money, and what we found was $16 million in campaign contributions to the governor and to the state legislators who passed this. And we could only find a little over $25,000 in campaign contributions from people opposed to the mining legislation. So by a 610-to-1 margin, the pro-mining interests overwhelmed the anti-mining forces when it came to campaign contributions. So that's the competing allegiance or the conflicting dependency that we have. The legislature is supposed to be dependent on the people to determine what actions they take, but they've become instead dependent on the campaign donor class, to the people who supply them the money to run for re-election. Those are the people that they are really catering to, and the mining issue was a classic illustration of those competing or conflicting allegiances that we have in places like our state capital.
Well, the same thing with payday loans. I mean, you pick the issue, and where a big business has an interest, look out.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, we see it on issue after issue, and we're seeing it on sand mining. A 2,100% spike in contributions from sand mining interests just in the last 6 years, and now you know Tiffany's been pushing this legislation after dealing with the iron mining issue. Now he's pushing legislation that would prevent local communities from having any say over sand mining, even preventing local communities from taking any steps to deal with explosions, with the use of dynamite in their own backyards. It would preempt any sort of local oversight of these operations. Well, it was hard for us not to notice a 2,100% increase in campaign donations from the interests that are profiting from sand mining.
So, and yet, if you had one of them here, they would look you in the eye and say, money doesn't influence our vote.
Of course, all the politicians say that they've never been influenced by a single campaign contribution, but that it's all a coincidence. But I tell you, when you look at issue after issue, you look at the school voucher issue, $97 million on the pro voucher side, nine times more than what you find on the anti voucher side. So it's one coincidence after another. And after a while, it starts to look like a pattern.
Does the Republican Party of Wisconsin have any say over where this money goes, or what happens when they get the money?
Well,
don't we know?
These groups that we were talking about are supposed to, under law, be independent. They're not supposed to coordinate or collaborate with candidate campaigns or the parties. But I think that's actually one of the things that may well be a subject to the John Doe investigation, is whether they might have some emails, they might have some evidence that shows that there was coordination or collaboration. And if there was, then that could be an area where there was some law breaking. So I think there's really two likely areas of focus for this John Doe probe. One would be this whole... what happened out in California, trying to unravel this whole money laundering scheme, the way the shell game works. So it may be about these groups conspiring to get around disclosure laws, I think the other thing would be that, you know, there's possibly a violation of law where both at the state and federal level, there are explicit prohibitions on these outside groups coordinating and actively working mm-hmm. with candidate campaigns or parties. And so that could be a problem here, too. The groups are supposed to be at arm's length, but you know, I think increasingly you hear these actors talking as if they're working in pretty close concert with the Walker campaign and others.
Did I read the paper correctly that those who have asked the court to delay any further discussion of the John Doe would not identify themselves? They were anonymous? Certainly
the groups being represented are anonymous. You know, and reporters have revealed names of a few attorneys, and mostly they're out-of-state attorneys who have filed these requests for a stay of the investigation, to block the investigation. But who they're representing is a mystery, and they're trying to keep that under wraps.
I'm trying to imagine a court hearing where some unnamed lawyers are standing up and saying, "Your Honors, here's our position. Who are we talking about? Well, we can't tell you that. How much money are we... Can't tell you that. Are you court? We can't tell you about anything. So just stop investigating."
Yeah. For unbelievable. For a non-lawyer like me, and for your average citizen, all of that just seems kind of otherworldly and pretty bizarre. The idea that you know you can have people representing unknown, unnamed clients who were spending millions of dollars to influence elections that came from unnamed, unknown donors who they feel have a right to remain anonymous.
Proof, yeah. If you needed any further proof that the system has to be reformed, this is the one to look at.
Yeah, this, you know, I think it's been evident to me for a very long time that the system is horribly broken, but I think we're reaching a point where now you can start to see a critical mass of citizens who may not have mm-hmm. been paying close attention before, or may not have been persuaded that things were poisoned before, but they're starting to, you know, they're starting to be able to read the handwriting on the wall and they see something that's really broken.
Is this something that could undo the Walker Walker's efforts, either at re-election or that to the further his notion, apparently, that he wants to run for president? I mean, it seems it ought to, even the investigation, even the hint of scandal, should slow his this idea of going to the White House, my goodness.
Unless he's on a tour.
Yeah. My guess is that those who support Scott Walker will not be persuaded by anything, even criminal charges. And those who oppose Walker already oppose him so vehemently that they don't need any additional reasons for opposing him. He's one of the most polarizing political figures I've ever seen. And you know, the amazing thing is that it looks as though he's pretty much guaranteed to get at least 47 or 48% of the vote no matter what. It doesn't matter how few jobs are created during his tenure. It doesn't matter how far away from the 250,000 job promise he is. It doesn't matter whether there are associates of his who've been convicted. It doesn't matter. None of it matters because there are 47 or 48% of the voters who are going to back him no matter what. The question is whether he can get to 50. And right. You know, the early polls, it was hilarious. 70% of the people said they had no idea who Mary Burke was, but it was a statistical dead heat between Walker and Burke. And so what that says is that there are an awful lot of voters who it doesn't matter who the candidate is, it's just anybody but Walker for them. So, you know, he's definitely vulnerable, but you know, the question is can somebody stop him from getting that extra 2 or 3 or 4% that he would need to get up over the 50% mark?
And if you were raising money for him right now, you'd be sitting in the Koch brothers' living room, saying you got to come up with the money so that we can make sure that we win.
Yep.
Yes. Well, Mike McCabe, thank you very much for your time with us this morning.
Oh, it's been a
Mike,
pleasure.
Always,
good talking with you as always.
Very good.
You're the best.
WISDC,
thank you.
WISDC, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Mike McCabe, the executive director of the campaign. We're glad to have had him on this morning. Ed, we're going to take a brief pause here while we make connection, and we certainly hope we reach him, Harvey Wasserman. So stand
Great.
By. You're listening to Fighting Bob Radio. I'm Eric Shubring, and coming up, a conversation with Harvey Wasserman. Harvey?
Hello?
Harvey Wasserman, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, this is Eric Shubring calling from Fighting Bob Radio.
Okay.
How are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing very well. Harvey, Ed Garvey is on of Fighting Bob. I know that you are familiar with each other. I can recall a conversation with the two of you several years ago, and Ed is, I'm sure he will now, speaking enthusiastically about the good work that you do.
Thank you.
For sure.
Ed? Yes. Harvey, Ed initiated, said getting a hold of you would be a great thing to bring to Fighting Bob Radio. Ed has been following as not enough people.
Time and do see me at nukefree.org.
Excellent.
Very
nukefree.
Good. Thank
.org.
You.
Wonderful.
Take care.
Ed, thank you. Harvey Wasserman, 30 years involved in fighting nuclear power. And again, the website there, nukefree.org. I'm Eric Shubring. You've been listening to Fighting Bob Radio. Be well.